This podcast is produced on the unceded lands of the Dirga-speaking Indigenous Australians on Walbunga country of the Yuin Nation. As we record these stories, we acknowledge the innate birthing wisdoms and traditions held by the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, the traditional custodians of this land. We remember the first women of this nation, the custodians of land and birth, who birthed on country in culture and tradition. Here, as we share in stories of birth, preconception, pregnancy, and postpartum experiences from rural, remote, and outer regional communities, may we remember and stand for the cultural significance of birth, women's business, and birthing on country. May we nurture and support women through this rite of passage as we hear of the possibilities ignited and limitations created. May we share in the power of storytelling and memory as we listen and learn from these birth stories. And may we always remember the ancestral wisdoms belonging to the country these birth stories occur on today. As a rural birthing woman, I've changed, and so too must the podcast. I was polite after my first birth. Really, deep down, I was angry. Angry with the lack of consideration around rural birthing choices and answers as to what do we do when our care is via distance. I tried being nice. In my local area, we've tried to re-engage our providers and seek re-ignition of local options, but systems are full of delays, and so we can't just wait for their answers. We need your stories, your answers. How did you remember your birthing power in the forgotten space that is rural birthing women? How did you find the memory that you're more than an inconvenience of location, and in fact, you are a birthing goddess? We want to hear your stories. We want to have answers because rural birthing must have another pathway. Not all rural birthing roads lead to birth trauma. Not all rural births are bordered by limitation. How do we do it when the system is against us? When they shut our birthing units? When their policies and procedures either forget to consider us or railroad us into augmentation? We, the rural women of Australia, are angry and we say no more lying down and being the good, rural, stoic woman. We don't accept that we are too difficult. Augmentations of labour have their place, but they should not be commonplace, and they are certainly not the solution to the distance placed by systems between us and our care providers. This is our question for this season. Where is the empowerment? And what are the choices for rural birthing women? In today's episode, we welcome Cassie. We thank her for re-entering the birth portal with us to share her three birth stories and her journey from hospital to home birth. We hope you enjoy this episode. So, if we kick off,
yep,
you wouldn't mind introducing yourself, who makes up your and where you come from.
Yep, so I'm Cassie and I live in Benalla, which is in northeast Victoria. There's myself, my husband, and then my eldest daughter, Myla. She's from a previous relationship. And then me and my husband, we have two kids, Lottie, who's 4 in December, and then Finn, who is 1 in 2 weeks.
Beautiful, and congratulations. That's huge, walking the first 12 months.
Thank you so much.
So if we go way back to your first pregnancy, living rurally at the time.
So I was actually living even more rural than what I am now. I lived in a small town called Euroa. I was 18 at the time when I fell pregnant, just after I'd finished high school. And where I lived, they have a doctor's clinic, but they have no maternity care or obstetric care, and even their hospital there is very small and only for people with private health insurance. So there was absolutely no options available there, and you have the option to birth in, there's three different hospitals around Euroa, and one of them's quite a big hospital, but I wanted to stick to the more country kind of hospital, so I chose to actually birth Myla in Benalla, which is a 35-minute drive. That was, back in 2013 was when all this happened. So I didn't know very much about birth. All my family had had just normal hospital births. I didn't know that there was any other options out there. And at that age, I never would have even considered anything other than a hospital birth. I had it was Benalla's like a it's an interesting setup. It's an obstetric-led maternity like care model, and the midwives are there and they kind of walk with you on a journey, but it's all like under the obstetricians. So you would have alternating appointments,
Okay.
one with pardon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have one with your obstetrician, and then your next appointment you would see the midwife, and you'd have like this little folder, and they would print out your information, and you'd just give it to the next person at each appointment.
Like
And
the yellow card that we've got in New South Wales.
yeah.
If you pass through, you pass through a different person kind of every time and hand them
Yeah.
a card and they get the gist of you.
Yeah. It's not a really practical model of care, is it? It's
No.
very it's very it's not very personal. So that was pretty much that how my pregnancy was. Like, my pregnancy was really cruisy. I think at 19 years old, about to give birth, I was obviously pretty scared about motherhood and all of that. I do remember, so if you because Benalla's hospital, if they need, because they don't take anyone under 37 weeks pregnant, because they're a small hospital. So you have to reach that 37 weeks milestone and you have to be low risk the whole way through. And if the baby needs any type of extra support, then you're automatically transferred to Wangaratta, which is another 30 minutes down the highway again.
Okay.
Or I guess like when you hit that 37 weeks and you know, phew, I can birth at the hospital closer to me, like that was always a relief moment. And I had that relief with Lottie as well, when I hit that 37 weeks. I just remember that drive from Euroa to Benalla in labour was horrific. I hated every moment of it and it was extremely uncomfortable. And
Please
oh,
backtrack slightly. What was it like when you went into labor? Had you been feeling it in the weeks coming up, or was it quite sudden? And then when did you decide to hop in the car and drive?
So I woke up in the middle of the night with contractions and I had done no birth preparation, absolutely nothing. So it really, I had no capacity to handle what I was going through, I guess. So I woke up having contractions, had the bloody show and all of that,
Yeah.
and rang the hospital and they pretty much said, yep, sounds like things are starting to begin, like just stay at home. If you would like, we'll come into the hospital in the morning and we'll check you over. So I did that, went to the hospital. They said that I was in early labor, and I remember they gave me an endone and sent me home again. So,
Wow.
yep. And that was it. And then I just stayed in early labor all day. And then I think it was about 6 o'clock at night. I couldn't cope anymore at home, and we got in the car and we went back to Benalla to the hospital. I just remember like nothing was consistent, or like, oh, it was maybe like every 5 minutes, so really not what hospitals want to see presenting with, but I wasn't coping. I was young, scared, so I went to where I thought was safest.
Yes.
So yeah, that, and I ended up in the hospital. And I back then you were able to labor in a birth pool. So I remember laboring in the birth pool, laboring in the shower. I had a midwife who was, she was really lovely, but at that particular time in my life, I didn't quite vibe with her. So I was like, you're a little bit too like, oh, it's okay. Like, I'm like, no, I need like authority. I need someone to be like, do this, do that. So I really struggled with that. It's probably a bit of immaturity coming through.
And did you have support people with you as well who you knew?
Only Myla's dad, and again, he was 19 as well. So both of us were just in there completely flying blind. And I wouldn't have said that he was a particularly supportive person either. He fell asleep in my labor, left me to go do a Macca's run, those types of things.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're not together for obvious reasons. Yeah, so I do remember I was very adamant though that I didn't want anyone else in my birth space, and that was quite important to me. And I didn't understand it back then, but I now, nearly 10 years later, I can understand why I felt so strong about not welcoming 101 people into the space. Yeah, so it was quite a medical intervention labor. I labored as long as I could, but exhaustion probably crept in. I think I got to the hospital at like 6:37, and I was exhausted by about 3 in the morning. And it was get her on the drip, give her an epidural, and let her have a sleep. And that's pretty much what happened. And I got a couple of hours rest, and then I woke up. I remember I had like a bit of a sleep, and I woke up at 7 in the morning, and I knew it was time to push. Like I could feel that things were ready, and I,
Like the epidural.
yes, definitely. So for some reason with me, they only seem to work properly on one side, and the other side of my body just doesn't seem to respond very well to it. So I knew it was time to push. And I the ho Benalla Hospital back then, like I pushed for 2 hours and 45 minutes, and there is no way that that hospital in this day and age would let me push that long. These days, they would have caesared me if I presented with the same birth again. So I'm very, very lucky that Myla was vaginal. Very, very lucky. But yeah, it was because of the epidural, it was legs up in stirrups, and she was supported out with the suction cap thing. And I had an episiotomy too, so that was pretty horrible recovering from. Yeah,
Have been close to access the midwife support, or if there was midwife support even. From that hospital. So when you were home and you were healing from your episiotomy things, how was that feeling for you being somewhat isolated then?
Sorry, what was that?
How was that feeling for you being isolated from your care while healing from your birth?
It was really challenging. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have any support. My family are not particularly supportive either. So the midwife did one visit, which was really lucky because I remember there was a lot of rain and they didn't think that they were going to be able to come across. But I remember she checked me over, and that was the only visit that I had and only follow-up that I had from the hospital. And then I think that's when like your maternal child health like they step in. but I think they checked on me once as well. No, actually, I went missing in the system and I sought them out because I had no support and I turned up when I was about 4 weeks postpartum, in tears because breastfeeding was still quite challenging for me and I had no one to help me. So.
When you were in hospital, had they supported you around breastfeeding, or had it been very kind of abrupt? There you go.
I was so lucky when I was in hospital. The first day was a breeze, and then the second night the cluster feeding kicked in, and I didn't know what it was, and I was in so much pain, and I had no sleep, and at this time there was no midwives on, so I actually had to call a midwife, and she had to drive an hour to the hospital to come and support me to be able to get breastfeeding going. So I remember now I was in hospital all by myself with just me, Mila, and her dad. And I was trying to move through this cluster feeding alone. But the midwife, her name was Gretchen, she drove an hour to come and support me through that. And in the end, I think they put me on a nipple shield and pretty much booted me out the door. But I was thankful to her for just driving that distance to help me. Like,
Of course, yeah.
yeah.
It sounds like the travel factor was a huge factor for this first pregnancy and in birth and then in postpartum as well. That, like, someone might hear 35 minutes and it might not sound like an awful lot, but it's the absence of resources as well. Like, even in those communities where there was a hospital, the nurse, midwife wasn't immediately accessible either.
Yes, definitely. No, you're right. Like 35 minutes doesn't sound like far to drive, but when you're in need of something, that's a long drive, especially right in that moment. I know that I called the ABA a fair bit with Mila too, because there just wasn't anything in Euroa at that time.
Okay, and how did you find that over the phone, engaging with them?
It was really helpful. And they helped me to feel like that what I was going through was quite normal and that I wasn't alone and that a lot of women go through the exact same things that I was going through.
Would they stay on the phone with you for a while, and like, what kind of things would an ABA consultant be able to help you through with that phone consult?
So every time I rang, I was usually in tears, because it was the end of the day, what they call the witching hour, and I felt like I didn't have any milk. So I would ring them in tears. They would ask me what was going on, and eventually calm me down. And then they would just educate me on what's normal. So at the end of the day, we have less breast milk, because it fills up overnight while we're sleeping. And then it was just, like calm yourself down because the more stressed you are, the less milk production you have. And just explaining to me that your milk doesn't run out. It's a consistent, what is it? Like feed demand, cycle. So the more I got her on, the more I would make. And I think I rang them about two or three times before I engaged with the maternal child health. And they were helpful. Like, I ended up breastfeeding Mila for 11 months. So that initial support was very beneficial to keep me on that journey.
And really good to know that, like, you can call them in a state of complete distress as well.
And 24 hours too. So, yes.
Because I reckon people would talk themselves out of calling sometimes when we're in our state of utter desperation and it's all reached peak point. Sometimes we can close off more, and that's amazing to hear that they just receive wherever you're at.
No, they were absolutely beautiful.
So you were sharing that at around 4 weeks postpartum, that's when, because you got lost in the system, which, oh, but yeah, you connected with your maternal child health care nurse. What kind of happened around that?
They put me in their system. They linked me in with the local mothers group, and then I began the routine appointments that is set out through, you know, the first 12 months or so, like those routine visits, the, what is it, the four, eight weeks, like four. All those ones, yeah.
And did the mother's group help as well with, like, you wouldn't have had, like, your whole friendship group from school having all their kids at the same time, so connecting with other mums, how was that?
Surprisingly, it was actually at my mother's group. We're falling out of contact now, but my mother's group was all young mums as well, except for one other lady. So it was quite beneficial. And after the, like, the ones that the maternal child health set up for you to go to, we continued to catch up, I think, maybe once every couple of weeks. And that went on for, I think, maybe 12 months or so. Yeah. Yep. So we've fallen out of contact now, but in those first 12 months, I think it was quite nice and not what you would, what you would expect. Cause I know a lot of young mums shy away from mother's group because I guess there is a bit of a difference when you have a child at 18, 19 compared to, you know, nearing on 30 or 30 plus. So
So I know you're a doula now. Do you think in this first birth experience, some of those seeds of wanting something more, wanting some better supports and things were being sown in this birth experience, in this pregnancy journey and in your postpartum?
Not that I knew it at the time, but yes, definitely, because it was a big thing for me. I went through my pregnancy alone and I went through my postpartum alone. I didn't understand it, but it was like, it was a big thing for me and I was very much aware of that and how it made me feel.
Yeah. And so it was quite a while then before you, approached having a second kid. What had kind of built up as the different things you wanted for this second pregnancy, second conception, second birth? What were you starting to weave in this kind of space between postpartum and preconception?
I wish I could say that I truly learned my lesson from Myla. but Michael and I fell pregnant unexpectedly and we had an early birth. So that really kind of kickstarted us in wanting to have a family, like continue on with, you know, having more kids. So we just started trying to conceive as soon as the doctor gave us the go ahead. I did no preconception work, unfortunately. My headspace probably wasn't in the best space and I didn't have any plans for my postpartum, my pregnancy or anything. All as I wanted was a natural birth. That was the only thing I had on my mind during the whole experience, was I just wanted a natural birth at the Benalla Hospital again.
You wanted from your first experience not to happen again? Like, were there already some stuff that you were going, I was happy with this and I wasn't happy with this, or is this kind of come to later?
I made sure Michael and I went to the hospital, ran prenatal, like the labor and birth education class that they ran, just because I went in with Myla completely flying blind, not really knowing what happens during labor. And I wanted Michael to be prepared as well. So we sat through that and that was probably really it. And I think a lot of my birth with Lottie and my preparation with Lottie was more for Michael because it was his first child. And I didn't want him, I guess, probably to feel like I did, just completely, as I said, flying blind during that whole situation.
Yeah.
But yeah. Sorry.
Was your care the same again? So were you still working with a lot of different people?
Yep. So care structure was still the same and I had the same obstetrician. So it was just that alternate obstetrician midwife. My pregnancy with Lottie was a little bit more complicated. I had a couple of reduced fetal movement scares, one at 28 weeks. So I went in for CTG monitoring, and there was talks of me being flown to Melbourne. Like, there was just like a lot of little hiccups along the way, which kind of had us in a state of fear for the most part of, like, for pretty much all the pregnancy, actually, because we were scared of having a loss, and then we had the reduced fetal movements. So, yeah.
And so as you kind of did those classes and things, was there a little bit of a support plan that you guys were developing, or was it something that was kind of teetering, as you were saying, on that energy of the fear of having a loss, and just checking in with that kind of the whole time of what's going on here, rather than maybe thinking forward to the birth? And
It was really hard to think forward to the birth for us both, and both of us didn't feel particularly connected to Lottie while I was pregnant, because just of that immense fear that we had. As I got towards the end of my pregnancy, I did ask my sister to be there, and my cousin, who Michael is also very close with as well. So we did have a support network for the birth. Wish I could say that that remained in place after the birth. I think that there seems to be a fair bit of culture around the honor of getting to see a birth, but then it, like, just, you know what I mean? Like, just, oh, yep, that's another notch on the belt. Like, see you later, I've seen the birth kind of thing. Yeah, so that's really, like, our experience with Lottie was really, I wish it was more positive than what it is, unfortunately. It was quite hard. We didn't buy anything for her and really do much preparation until the last trimester. And then, yeah, with the constant discussions of what did they say she was, the restricted growth. So they kept talking about having to induce me and sending me to a bigger hospital because I was too high risk and this and that. So it's a pretty crappy experience, to be honest.
Yeah. So then when it came to birth, did you go into labor, or were you induced?
So I ended up making it to 40 weeks and I was induced. And that was a horrible experience.
You induced?
They did the balloon insertion first.
Yeah.
And then that didn't particularly do anything. So the next morning I had my waters broken. And then that still didn't start things. So then I had the drip put in my arm. And then, yeah.
And how did your body respond once that drip went in?
It was okay for a little bit. And then it took off really hard and fast. And I wasn't getting much of a break. And having had in the back of my mind that all I wanted was a natural birth, it was pretty hard when I got to a point where I wanted, morphine. I wanted the morphine, and then I wanted an epidural because I couldn't cope with it. I just remember seeing it on the screen every time another contraction would come. It would just make that fear response kick in. And we know what happens when the fear response kicks in.
And I do agree. I think there is a psychological impact of having the CTG there and monitoring, and you can see the peaks and troughs on the sheet that's printing out from it. You can hear it beep. You can, like, it's a very medicalized
place
that it takes us to. And when we're taken to that, I guess that thinking brain taking us out of that animalistic kind of state that birth exists in.
Yes, definitely. And in my labor, I wasn't allowed to, because I had that monitoring thing on, I wasn't allowed to have a shower. I wasn't really allowed to move around because they would lose her heartbeat on the monitor. So I kept having arguments with the midwife during my labor about it.
So what kind of like when you say you weren't allowed to move around, do you mean like you weren't allowed to move around the room, or they wouldn't even let you like slide off the bed and bob away?
Leaning over bed, just trying to like sway, and she wouldn't let me sway because every time I swayed, like it would lose that monitoring. And I remember she would literally stand there and hold it on my belly really firmly while I was trying to work through contractions, and she was quite frustrated with me. Yes, because
you feel you in that. Oh my goodness. That would have been so frustrating. Like,
yeah, especially like it's in our, like, you know, your animalistic brain wants to take over and do what it needs to do, and then you've got the medical side saying no. So yeah.
The use of CTG in induction, I understand why they make it compulsory. It makes life easier for them.
Mm.
But yeah, that constant CTG monitoring. And then particularly with what you're saying, that insistence that they don't miss a beat.
Yep.
Hard on the birthing woman, and you're put in this restrictive state. And I remember that from my induction.
Yep. So you have an induction as well.
I did, yeah, before. Yep. Grace with Shanley, I had an induction, and I just remember feeling tied down with the Pitocin going that way and the CTG cables going that way, and just the restrictiveness of it.
It's so hard, isn't it? I couldn't imagine having to go through that ever again, to be honest. It was a horrible experience.
Mm. And I do believe like people can have empowering births in all ways, like the way that was just being held on you, and you were being asked to fight and things, like you were not being seen, you were not being heard, and
and I remember when she walked in for the shift, she just dragged like those you know, those metal trolleys that the hospitals have when they those trolleys, she just dragged it in with a stool and sat down and watched me and just started taking notes. And I felt so violated. And then because I had Michael and then two support people, she wasn't happy about that either, and said that that Michael couldn't have a chair.
Oh.
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
So it was not a good time.
I know I've seen things before about like, even midwives will have a bad day. But if you happen a bad day, you really need to do something about not taking that into a woman's birthing space, because you just can't do that to someone. Like, we're not allowed to have a bad day in a sense, because you can't in someone's birth portal state put that kind of stuff on.
No.
In a chair. Oh my God. Yeah. So you had a lot of adversity coming into that space in terms of energy.
Yes.
And you were trying to move through your induction, and you were saying you were looking to the epidural and being like, I think I need that. Yep. How did you move through the next kind of stages of labor?
I ended up getting the epidural, and it immediately didn't work on the one side of my body. And I asked for them to bring the doctor back in, and the doctor actually asked the midwife if anyone had bothered to check how dilated I was.
Okay.
Turns out I was fully dilated and I was ready to push, apparently. So that's why it wasn't working. And I guess why I might have been so hysterical wanting an epidural in the first place.
Yeah, like that transition story of I'm going to leave now, or I'm going to do this. It's fine. We'll have the baby later.
Yeah. So it was definitely a lot, because it just went from, you know, right, it's ready to push, to let's ring the obstetrician. The legs were up in the stirrups. And it was go time, and she came out, I think, in one push. Like, it was very, very fast.
Which is so contrasting to your 2 hours, 45 minutes pushing with your first.
Yes, definitely. I wasn't expecting it at all. And it was, I remember she'd come out so fast that I didn't realize I'd just given birth.
And when you say she came out in one push, you mean like head, body, all out?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
And yes, so she was also born not breathing, and she needed to be put on the trolley. And they just, I think they had to clear her out and give her some oxygen, and she was okay.
How did that feel for you, not having that kind of immediate time with her, having her taken away?
I honestly, now it affects me, but back then it didn't affect me because I'd been given morphine. So I was in la la land, like, yep, she'll be fine. Like, I just, yeah. But now that I understand and know more, I definitely mourn that. So, but I also know that my choices, I guess, in that labor and birth probably was what caused her to come out needing a little bit of support. So, yeah.
It's really hard around, like, navigating, but reflecting as well on those choices, because, like, the support network that you had, the care model that you had, wasn't on your side.
No. And I think the people that I had in my birth space, again, like, we all, I guess, had that complete, complete trust in the system and that they were for us.
Yeah.
And
that said about your family as well, that, like, you'd grown up with that narrative. And I think our narrative that we carry forward, whether it's communal or it's social or it's from our family, we carry the narrative of trust in them, hand it over. And people even can look at you kind of obscurely if you go seek out things like calm birth and stuff. It's like, just trust in the system. Stop trying to mess with it.
And definitely.
People are then isolated again, but not this time isolated by distance. We're isolated by people's opinions.
Yes.
To siphoning ourselves through this experience that just churns through. And you can get lucky. It's a lottery. You can get that lucky care provider. But on this instance, you didn't win the midwife lottery with her birth.
No, I didn't. And you know what? Claire, who you've interviewed before, she was a midwife at that time working at the hospital, but she was unwell and was in hospital herself. So I could have very well had a beautiful midwife, but unfortunately people get sick and I just didn't get the lotto that day.
No. So when did you find after this birth and when did it start to land in your body and to land in your mind and things that you wanted something else? Did you become a doula before you birthed again, or has this been a recent thing? Like, what happened in these coming years with reflection and discovery of new ideas and new information to go, you know what? No, I don't want to birth in that way. I want these things and I know how to advocate for myself and I've heard of this tapestry that is the alternative pathway.
Yeah. So Lottie, our little firecracker that she is, has pushed both Markle and I to question just about anything and everything that we have thought that we knew about the world and life. So I guess with a lot of that, it kind of just naturally pushed me into the birthing world. And one of my girlfriends who you've also interviewed before, Alicia, she had a VBAC in Benalla as well. And I remember she sent me a birth preferences thing, and Lottie was maybe 6 months old then.
Okay.
And I said to Michael, I'm like, oh, Leisha sent me this birth preferences thing. No births follow a birth plan. Like, that, it just doesn't happen. And I didn't have the capacity to even think that positive births could be real. And I just thought it was horrible and painful for everyone. And then Leisha had the birth of her dreams. Everything she wanted, she got. So it really sparked something in me, because I'd walked away from my birth with Myla and Lottie like I'd failed as a woman, because our whole existence is based around giving birth. Mm. So, yeah, it made me really research pregnancy and birth and hypnobirthing and calm birthing. And I started, like, you know, watching videos of women having these experiences, and not even in a home setting, just in general. And so it really ignited something in me and made me want to experience that as well, knowing that it actually can be a possibility. Mm. And then one of my girlfriends, she fell pregnant, and she decided to have a home birth, because by this stage Claire was up and running in the area. And it was just, I guess, that exposure through Esther and then Leisha's experience as well that really pushed me to research further and further and further into that realm, I guess.
There is this communal sharing of knowledge, because, like, all the capitals that we come with our cultural capital from our family. And then the cultural capital that we absorb has been through our schooling and things. But once we hit this world of having kids, who we're exposed to and what they tell us about their birth story, it has a huge impact.
Absolutely.
And I think there is a shifting culture around how people are sharing these things too, and going, oh, look at this piece, or here's this, and maybe podcasts and stuff like Instagram and YouTube. Like you were saying, you watched videos of people birthing in those contexts. Like, I feel so grateful to the amount of women that have uploaded that huge experience in their life, their birth videos, to YouTube, so that we can absorb and experience and understand and consider.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I wasn't a doula at all until after Finn. I attended Esther's home birth, and I was to be there in a photography capacity, because I have dabbled in and out of a little bit of photography here and there. And I, in her birth space, I remember having this, just this real pull to just naturally being a support for her. And it was like I was energetically just connected with her, and I knew what she needed, when she needed, and everything. Like, it just worked so perfectly. It almost sounds like unreal, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, I was like, all right, I could see she was moving a little bit differently. Let's get you a heat pack, or haven't emptied your bladder for a little bit. Let's empty your bladder. And then she would be, you know, it'd be a little bit easier going on her again. And it was just, you know, let's put some essential oils on here and there. It was just beautiful. Like, when I first got there, Claire was actually at another birth at that time in Aubrey. So Esther was even more rural than I am. She's technically remote, I guess you could say, because she's half an hour out of Benalla as well. And Claire was in Aubrey, which is about an hour and a bit away from where Esther was. So she was scared about having to birth alone. Altogether. So, and I just remember when I got there, I just made her laugh and made all the good hormones come out, and then her labor set in properly. So it was a really beautiful experience in supporting someone in just that physiological birth.
Can I ask you too, so you got to see Claire in action before you kind of asked her to be your midwife when you were then pregnant with Finn. What was that like after the care experiences you'd had to see that from an outside perspective and go, I'm actually seeing this care model play out in front of me?
So because I was in Esther's birth team, I actually met Claire in the birth plan meeting, and I wasn't pregnant then. I was at that time trying to conceive. So mm-hmm. I got to hear Claire work, and I got to meet her second midwife, Louise, as well, who's mm-hmm. just beautiful as well. And I got to see their dynamic together. I got to see their different personalities, and I got to see Claire working with a pregnant woman, doing like the checkup, like, you know, checking the heartbeat and doing the measurements and stuff, if that's what Esther wanted, which she did. Mm-hmm. And
so what was, is a consent relationship right there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Claire's whole business is your birth midwifery, and she's really strong in that, that it's your birth and it's your decision.
Yeah.
So
just so contrasting compared to the person holding that sensor on you.
Yeah.
Being like, would you like me to do this?
Definitely. Well, when Claire, like at the end of that birth plan meeting, I said to Claire, I'm like, I'm trying to conceive. As soon as I'm pregnant, I'm ringing you. And she's like, okay. And she's like, I'll see you in a couple months. I'm like, done. and then I fell pregnant just around the time that Esther was due. So mm-hmm. I think I was about 5 or 6 weeks pregnant when she went into labor.
Yeah.
So Claire didn't get there until about 20 minutes before the birth, but I got to see what she was like and hear her voice and how she supports her, the women. And then I got to see all the after stuff as well, which I think is really beneficial. There's a lot of emphasis on the support in the labor and the birth, but there's so much that goes into that postpartum, like making sure you're not bleeding, checking the belly, that everything's like, you know, what is it, contracting properly and whatnot. And I was blown away. I hadn't slept all night that night. I was early pregnant and I couldn't sleep all day the next day because I was just in a state of, I was high on oxytocin. but I was also blown away at what I'd seen with Claire and Louise, and I was really excited for our birth as well.
Mm.
So yeah, and then that Esther's birth was probably what really triggered me in knowing I wanted to support birthing women. I just wasn't there yet, I guess, because I was just pregnant myself. So
yeah. And if I can take you back just a little bit, so yep. before you were pregnant with Finn, you'd already decided that your birth would be different.
Yep.
How did those conversations go with your partner? Like, as you kind of debriefed the birth experience you'd been through together and expressed this, I've discovered there's other ways to birth and I want to follow an alternate care pathway. How did you work through that together in your partnership?
So I'm very much the type of person that goes away and researches something and come up with a grand idea, present it to Michael, and then he's like the other side of the scale, and he kind of centers me and brings me back down. So I researched, you know, all about, this was before Esther had her home birth. I'd researched about, you know, home birth, free birth, like all of these things, and I was dead set I was having the free birth. I'm like, I don't want any medical providers near me. I don't want nothing. Like, I was so stuck in my way about it, and I presented that to Michael. Pardon?
Can I ask you what you'd kind of seen and heard about free birth and like who you'd kind of followed and things around that, in case people would love to dip into the thought pool and the knowledge that is free birth as well, that
yep.
really captured you?
So I joined the Home Birth Australia Facebook group.
Yeah.
And so in that group there's your hospital ran funded home births, and there's like private midwife home births like what Claire does, and then there's free birth home births in there. And then inside that group I was invited into a Wild Pregnancy and Free Birth Australia Facebook.
And so just in case people don't know, just to define wild pregnancy and free birth for them as well.
So a wild pregnancy is no medical care or intervention at all. And a free birth is an unassisted birth with no medical person in attendance.
Yeah. And so when you were on the Facebook page, you were seeing stories kind of come through of people's experiences that they'd had.
Yes. Yep. So I would just sit in the home birth group for ages and just read all these posts and comments and stuff. And then I think it just obviously popped up a few times, like free birth, wild pregnancy. And I was like, oh, what's this? And then I found that group and went into that group. And I researched in there, and a lot of the women in there like have shared their free births on YouTube and stuff as well. So I would watch their birth videos and whatnot. And it was quite empowering to watch and to see women, I guess.
And there are rural women doing that as well. Like,
yeah,
like, you know, in a way, because we're not all, we don't all have access to a private midwife operating close enough to our communities to access them. So yeah, a lot of rural women are electing to free birth and or also do wild pregnancy.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely, there is.
Going back to Michael.
Yes.
With him during your trying to conceive period, that it's going to be different.
Yeah, pretty much. I told him that we were going to have a wild pregnancy and a free birth, and he was not on board in the slightest. And I think after our experience with Lottie, I really don't blame him. He had his own trauma as well. And there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and a lot of me going, well, it's my birth. You don't get a say. And that typical, I guess, I don't know, you hear it a lot in the birth world.
Yeah. And I think, like, they're really hard conversations to have.
It is.
A whole host of reading and a whole host of research and exploring around it, that your partner hasn't dug as deep into that. And, yeah, the partner conversation is hugely difficult. And so how did you keep moving through that together?
I think it wasn't something that happened overnight. It was constantly backwards and forwards on the conversation. And then when Esther ended up using Claire as a private midwife, at some point in there we had a conversation about, would you be comfortable if we had a home birth instead? And then he was like, well, what are they going to bring? How are they going to help her if she does, if we have another baby that's not breathing? And I'm like, well, they have an oxygen tank. They have, you know, they know how to do meditation. They know they have, like, you know, medications and stuff. Claire carries a suitcase with her full of things. So with that in mind, he was happy to do the home birth. I think he still had his doubts, though, purely because I'd never experienced a physiological birth that didn't require intervention, I guess. So, yeah, it took a couple of meetings with Claire before Michael got fully comfortable. So it was a journey from preconception well into pregnancy with Finn for Michael to be fully on board. And then again, it wasn't until after he'd seen the birth unfold and everything just be complete bliss that he was like, okay, home birth is completely safe and I am an advocate for it.
Yeah. And I think that's, like you used the word before, that where physiological birth comes into play. Like when someone is hands off and saying, I trust your body, I trust your capacity to birth, and the checks are even less invasive as well, that your body, that physiological aspect, the physiology is allowed to do what it naturally does.
Yes.
And that's, I think why home birth has great stats as well, because we're leaving alone.
Yes.
And it might sound completely mental when people hear me say that, but there is an element where you step back and you go, this body does know what it's doing. It's just we've got so scared over time that we don't give that body enough reprieve or time to do what it's going to physiologically do.
There was a little quote that Michelle Palazia, she's a birth worker, she shared on her Instagram not long ago, and it was, if you don't do all the things, birth will still happen. And that I really find that so true in terms of having a physiological birth. It will still happen.
So pregnant with Finn,
yep.
How does care begin with Claire? In my own choosing to home birth with my second experience, we didn't properly sign up until 17 weeks. So I'm not actually sure how the initiating of it from the start
worked. So I got in contact with Claire the day after I got my positive test. She sent me off for some bloods, and then and then I asked for an ultrasound slip just for 12 weeks, not to check for anything. I wanted peace of mind that we would have a viable pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And after that 12 weeks, we set up our first face-to-face. I think it might have been, she might have seen us about 13, 14 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was the meet and greet, run through everything, how I was going, what care would look like, talking about finances, insurances, and all of that. It was a big first meet and greet.
Yeah.
And then after then you would pay her for the visit that she'd just, like, it was all in your home. So you'd pay her for that consultation, and then there was like a deposit that you would have to put down as well.
Yeah. And it's the in-home consultations aspect that's the Medicare rebates claimed on.
Yes. Yep. So you have to have a referral from a doctor to the private midwife to be able to get those rebates. So that in itself was hard for me to get. I had to see 6 doctors to get that referral.
Did Claire have recommendations of what doctors she's worked with in the past? So were you just...
Yes, she did, but I was pregnant in the middle of COVID, so a lot of places weren't seeing face to face, weren't taking on new patients. So the Benalla doctors here are pretty, I guess I can say it because, you know, Claire wouldn't be able to say it because she's a medical professional, but I can. They don't like her because she's taking business away from them, essentially. So
yeah,
they won't give you referrals really here. So.
Yeah, there are a lot of, it comes up in the home birth Facebook group. You can get a lot of combat from doctors where they express their fears, and they don't. Around pregnancy and birth, it was one of the times where I realized how very general practitioners can be.
And oh, definitely.
Like, oh, God, like, I do not have to fight this with you. Like,
yeah,
sort of letter.
I just remember the first appointment I went to try to get that referral, the doctor told me that third babies are usually transverse and require a C-section. And I'm like,
okay.
I walked out of there like, I still want a home birth. And I still didn't get the referral letter. So it took 6 goes for me to get that letter in the end. And Claire gave me suggestions on 2 doctors. I was not successful. One of the doctors was supposed to be a phone consult, and the practice manager actually rang me and said, you will not be seeing this doctor, and he will not give you a letter of a referral. And then I just got lucky on the last one, I think, and he was pretty happy to do it. And I don't know who he was. I don't know what practice he was from. He was just on the phone and he took my details, birth history, and gave it to me.
But, good. But wow.
Yeah.
You had to move through six.
And yeah.
I'm thinking about you sitting through six appointments, booking six appointments. Like, it just sounds huge.
Yeah, it was. And when you're in that first trimester, trying to run around and get that referral ready for when you hit 12 weeks or whenever, it was a lot. I was feeling really yucky. I was exhausted. It's a stress that you don't really need. And then in amongst COVID as well, with all the extra precautions and all of that, it was a lot.
Yeah, like home birth midwives, they've got to do their additional qualifications to receive endorsement, but they're still not respected and regarded. And
no.
Having to get that permission from a doctor that they are, like, allowed to see you.
Yeah.
I really believe in midwives as the professionals of birth. Like, it is the birth sphere, and obstetricians are professionals of birth as well. It's just obstetric birth.
They're yep.
different kinds of birth. Midwife-led birth and obstetric birth are different.
Definitely.
If you choose to move through obstetric birth, particularly through obstetric birth, and then we want things like a physiological birth, that's a paradox.
Yeah.
Midwife birth is with alignment, or the free birth community as well, which
yep.
again isn't available to everyone. Like, I think I have to have a look later, but they're on Instagram that reminds us that even free birth has privilege around it. Like,
yeah.
And I do recognise the financial privilege of having birth, but it can be hard. You guys go with the finances around it. I know that the figure, the sum, often scares people around home birth. I would say, after having done it, it is so worth it. You won't spend better money.
Yeah.
But it can be scary when you first see the figure and go, how am I going to pay that?
In that first meeting, Claire obviously tells you how much it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot. Michael had just changed his job, and he took quite a pay cut with that job. So we didn't have a lot of money, and what we did have in savings pretty much went to the home birth.
Yeah.
And then as life happens and things happen, we ran out of savings, and we were, I think, maybe like 30 weeks pregnant at that point. And it was, oh no, how are we going to pay for this? But I was so stuck in my ways. Like, we ended up figuring it out, and I think like tax returns and stuff, and it ended up being okay. But
yeah,
it was never we would have found that money one way or another, but we did struggle to have that home birth, and it was a lot of sacrifice. But again, as you said, it's an investment, and it was worth every penny, and I would pay it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I hear you. And so moving through then that early care, how were you feeling in yourself? Because this is now you receiving a wholly different pattern of care to what you'd been given in the past. You were seeing the same person every time, having, I assume, like, things affirmed and not needing to do that rehash that you always have to do if you're seeing a different person every time.
No, it was actually really good. So Claire would just, she would come over, she'd talk about how I was doing, and it was quite personal because she would, you know, be like, oh, and we're doing this and we're doing that. So it was really just, it was almost like a friendship that you would end up building. It's beautiful. And then when the 6 weeks is up, you kind of get sad and you're like, oh, I don't want you to go, but that's for later.
Yeah. It's like a breakup.
It is. It was, it's a lot. But yeah, no, she would come into the house. I think the appointments are supposed to go for like 45 minutes or something. And she would always be there for an hour and a half or 2 hours. Mm. And in that time, she would get to know the kids, get to know me. Michael was there for a lot of the appointments, get to know Michael. And just a lot of the time, like anything that would pop up for me and I would talk to her about, she would just have this way of just making any worry disappear. And just, she had just this, just a dead set trust in a woman's body, and that you are going to rock this birth and you are going to get everything that you want. And she would leave your appointment and you would feel excited to give birth and
yeah,
feel like, yeah, I'm definitely going to get everything that I want. It was just amazing.
I know I've said it before, but I believe it so very much that there is a psychology to our physiology as well. And having a practitioner, a birth worker that believes in you.
Yeah, definitely.
It makes a difference.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And then because she has that complete trust in a woman's body, and she's seen it obviously time and time again, she also gave Michael that confidence as well to trust me and my body.
Mm.
So after a couple of session like visits with her, he was feeling confident too, which was really, really good.
And were you welcoming of your other kids into your birth? So yes. Were these midwife appointments kind of engaging them in what it would be like to be there?
Yep. So we, yes, look. Okay. Sorry, that was.
That's fine.
Yeah, so they were at every appointment, the kids, and Claire, and we had plans of them being at the birth as well, and the birth. And then we would speak with Claire about that as well. My eldest has a little bit of fear around blood, so Claire spent a little bit of time talking about blood and what's normal and what's not normal and, you know, just really helping Myla through that too. So yeah, no, it was good. I'm not sure what other people are like in their births, but I loved having the kids a part of it all. I think it's in for us, I think it's important that kids are that they get to see, I guess, the way it should be for women. So
yeah, and I believed I had my son around as well. I believed like I was like birthing him into siblinghood.
Yes.
And so this huge transition, we're doing it as a family.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And that felt really significant. So how was it moving through the third trimester? Because I know that you were saying with your second pregnancy, that was quite an anxious point. Was everything moving well? Were you feeling supported? And how was that, I guess, mentally and physically up to labour?
So, again, I went through my pregnancy quite alone. So my best friend moved to the other side of Australia and she was supposed to be one of my birth supports. So I had that feeling of isolation and loneliness again, and then it was just back to Michael and I and just us always looking out for each other. So that really sucked. But other than that, I was really excited to give birth, really excited to go into labor. I would set up my birth, like do little things here and there to set up my birth space, and my last trimester was honestly, other than my friend leaving me, it was beautiful and I enjoyed every moment of it other than the aches and pains as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this time going into labor, no drive.
I love drive.
It's one of the parts about home birth that I really felt. And no induction, like, required.
No.
Pitocin drip. What was that experience like? Was it slow? Was it still something that happened quite quickly? And when did you touch base with Claire?
Our whole going into labor story was a lot. So it was like on a Thursday or something, because we had Finn just in Victoria. We were like right just in the middle of like the end of our last lockdown, I think it was. So Michael had just been exposed to a COVID positive person. And then, yeah, that night I started getting like early cramps and stuff. So that really sucked. And I rang Claire and I was glad to have a home birth. Like, are you still going to be able to come? We don't know if Mark was positive or not.
Yeah.
And she assured me that she would still be there. And if he returned a positive result, then she would come in full PPE. So that was a relief because I didn't hospital during COVID.
Yeah. And that's awesome that she would still come. And like, absolutely hard birth with her in full PPE, fantastic that she had an alternative.
Yeah, definitely. And because Rhea was just pregnant with their second at that time too, I can't thank her enough for actually saying that, yes, I will still be there even if Michael comes back positive, but he didn't. So, yeah, Michael, it was the Thursday that happened and he got swabbed on the Friday. And I was having like Braxton Hicks and stuff all that day. And then the Friday night, Lottie had school sores on her belly.
Okay.
And I was in early labor at this point, like no doubt about it. It just kind of like the Braxton Hicks just went from that to, oh, this feels different.
Yeah.
And then that's how I knew that it began. Like one of the Braxton Hicks was normal and then the next one it wasn't, and I knew that early labor had started.
And what would you describe the normal one versus the one that was getting a bit more intense?
Probably the way in which the belly contracts, I guess. Like the Braxton Hicks is like an all over tightening, whereas the actual contractions, I guess, are pushing down a little bit, I guess, like and down. So that was really it. I wouldn't have said that they were like horribly painful or anything. It was just like, oh, that was different and really strong.
Yeah
so that it was just a very, very subtle but transition from Braxton Hicks to early labor. And then the Friday night Lots had school sores, and nobody wants to bring in a newborn baby into the world with school sores.
Yeah.
So I rang the Benalla emergency department because our local doctors, you can't get in for 6 weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm like, I'm 40 pregnant. I'm in early labor. My daughter has school sores. Can I please come in and just get a script for some antibiotic ointment just to get rid of them? And they were like, we can't see you tonight, but come in tomorrow in the morning and we'll get a doctor to see you. So I'm like, that night my contractions really kicked off and I thought, oh, no, Michael hasn't got his results yet. Lottie has the untreated school sores. Like, this is a horrible environment to bring a baby into. And I was so stressed and lots of crying and a lot of emotions in that on that Friday night. And I rang my best friend that night and she just spoke with me until I calmed down, and then the contractions died off again to every 15 odd minutes. And I went to bed and woke up the next morning still pregnant.
Yeah.
And I took Lottie down to the hospital because, Michael couldn't obviously leave the house. He was in isolation. Took her down to see the doctor, and the nurses were like, oh, you're in labor, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah, just early labor. And they're like, oh, well, if things kick off, it's not too far for you to go into the birthing suite. And I'm like, oh, please don't say that to me. That is the last place I want to be. I'm going home. I was just like, yeah. I was so polite. I didn't want to be like, I'm having a home birth. I was just like, yeah. I just want that cream and I want to leave now. So got the cream and I left. And then Michael's results came back a couple of hours later and he was all good. So my home birth was back on as per normal and everything was fine again. And then, yeah, I early labored all day Saturday, Saturday night, all day Sunday. And Sunday night, and I had a chiropractor appointment on the Monday morning. Yeah. And that really changed this intensity of the contractions from that appointment. That all day I just early labored again. And then that night at dinner time, I didn't want my vegetables, which is not like me. I just wanted meat. Obviously I wanted protein for, you know, the long haul I was about to be in for. But yeah, I had, yeah, that, then the active labor kind of kicked in that night.
Okay. How did you feel having all those days of early labor? Was it frustrating or was it something that you were riding with? Like, or yeah, how did it feel?
I handled it like a pro, honestly. I just rode the waves. I went with it. I think having had Lottie and Michael with their little things, I didn't want to give birth at that time anyway. So I was like, I was happy for it to continue out as long as it did.
Yeah.
And I still slept amazing. Like I woke up through every surge, but I went straight back to sleep and it was so solid. Like it was not an issue for me at all. Like I was really, really I was good. Like I wouldn't complain about it at all.
And with Claire, were you like bouncing texts or?
No. So on that Friday night, I rang her cause I was like, yeah, we're on. I thought that this was it. And I rang her and and she's like, all right, well, I'll see you when things get, you know, closer together. And I never rang her and I think I texted her the next day and said, oh, things died off. And she said, that's all right, I'll be seeing you soon. And she goes into where Michael works and she would come in and see Michael every day and she'd be like, oh, I'll be seeing you in a day or two. And, yeah, I didn't need to really bounce texts off her because she was in seeing Michael at his work anyway. Sorry, you're right.
Then we land and it's active labor.
Yep.
And do you touch base with her immediately or are you holding off until?
I didn't feel like I needed her. So yeah. I didn't touch base with her straight away. I'd text a couple of friends. Like I have like this girls group chat that I told them what was going on and they were like, oh, you should probably just ring Claire and let her know what's going on. It's pretty consistent. And I rang her at some point and she was really beautiful on the phone. She brought me back to the breath and calmed me down. I wasn't hysterical, but she just calmed me down. It was nice. Like her voice was just calming. And then, yeah, she just said, start filling up the birth pool and ring me when you need me or when things get closer together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think we
get pool with while she was not there.
Pardon?
Did you get in the pool before she got there?
Yep. So I think we rang her at about midnight. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't ring her until I was pushing. completely accidental. I think part of me was a little bit I knew I was in labor, but I think because I'd had so much pre-labor, I expected it to die off at some point.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was really weird. I became really protective of my space and I was supposed to have another friend and a photographer join me and didn't want either of them there at that time either. So I think an element of it was denial, but also protecting that like sacred space, I guess.
It sounds like how people really seek out the dark corner to go birth in. Like,
and I did. I stayed when I was in the shower, I like hid in the corner under the water. And then like I'd set up this beautiful birth room with like these waterfall fairy lights and everything. Yeah. And I didn't want a single light on. I just stood by my birth altar, just moving through the motions, and had like this pillow fort, and I'd lay on that and just in darkness.
And what was on your birth altar as well?
I love essential oils. So I had my oil stand, and I had some crystals that I'd been working with through my pregnancy. I had a lot of plants. I had on one of my walls, I had pictures of my family and things that make me happy. And I had birth affirmations. I had motherhood affirmations.
The affirmations?
Pardon?
Do you remember any of the affirmations? Did any of them ride with you in this birth portal moment?
Yep. So I actually picked my favorite birth affirmation when I was pregnant, and I stuck it up in the bathroom mirror. What was it? These surges can't be stronger than me. They are me. Mm. And because my pregnancies before Finn, I had always felt like the contractions were unbearable and I couldn't get through them. Whereas, so that ended up being my affirmation to get through the surges. That, yeah, they couldn't beat me because they are me.
Yes.
And that was the one that stuck in my head through it all. And yeah, I just kind of rode the waves of labor, still in denial a bit. Everything died off at one point for quite a while, and I got really upset because I thought that I would have to do another night of this, but it was the pause before transition.
Right, cool.
So I ended up, I just remember staring at the pool, just upset, and I'm like, this is such a waste of water. You're going to have to do this again tomorrow. But I had like this, such a big instinct and urge to get in that water, and I didn't know why. And I'd been crying to Mark, like, we're going to have to do this another night. I can't do this again. And then the next minute I'm in the pool. What are you doing in the pool? I'm like, I don't know. I was in the pool, and I had like one or two surges in there, and the water was amazing for the relief. Oh, it was so good. And then transition hit, and it was on like Donkey Kong. And I was like, you need a re-clean now. And she was on the phone, and she was like, what's going on? I'm like, I have pressure everywhere. And I'm like, I feel like I'm pooing. And she's like, all right, I'm getting in the car.
Good on you for still having verbal capacity. Like,
I was screaming at her through the phone. But and then I don't really remember a lot of what happened through transition. I don't think a lot of people do. I just know that my waters broke just after I got off the phone to Claire, and Michael was trying to get me to breathe, and he's breathing on my face, and I'm like, don't you dare breathe on me. And then like I was screaming and yelling and just completely in my element of power.
Yeah.
And Claire got there, and I remember she said, you know, just focus on your breath, like remember your horse breath. And I'm like, it's not working. And then she like looked down there, and she's like, oh, there'll be a baby any minute now. Like, and it was like, we're on, like, and yeah, just woke up at around that time too. Yeah. And they came in, and Claire kind of like cuddled them as they all watched me give birth. And
Or was your partner in the pool with you?
So we agreed that Marco would be in the pool and catch baby,
mm-hmm.
and then pass baby to me, and that he would also announce the sex of the baby as well. So yeah, he jumped in the pool when the fetal ejection reflex really kind of kicked in. I do remember when I was like pushing and stuff, he was like a little bit stuck, like I remember feeling frustrated that he wasn't coming out quick, I guess you could say, because it felt like he was supposed to come out quick. And I don't even remember doing it, but I remember lifting my leg up and like changing positions into like a running man lunge type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Claire in the background being like, "That's it, listen, great." And like with that leg movement, Finn came out, and I think like another surge or two. So, and yeah, it was.
And what were those early moments like for you?
Michael caught Finn. He had one concern for the whole birth was, what do I do when you give birth? How do I pass the baby back to you with the cord and everything? And I'm like, my whole pregnancy, I'm like, don't even worry about it. And then Finn was born and he's like, how do I pass the baby back to you? So Claire was kind of do like a little shuffle this way and put your leg over the cord here and then pass the baby to her.
Yep.
So there was a little bit of that. And while he was doing that, he was like, it's a boy. And there was like a lot of like oxytocin as well. The two girls. So we had all prepared for another girl. And yeah, so a boy, it was a big shock. And it was a lot of like a, oh my goodness, a boy. Like, and I've just had a baby. And then like reality set in a little bit. And I'm like, I did it. And it was like, I swore a lot. I'm like, I effing did it. Like, I did it. And it was just on repeat. And then it was like, because we didn't have any photography or anything, like Michael quickly grabbed his phone like in that first minute and snapped the most blurriest picture. But there's me like in shock holding Finn with Claire in the back cuddling the girls with a big grin on their face, and it's beautiful. And that's like the only thing we have like in those immediate birth moments. But yeah, it was amazing. Like, I'm just smiling ear to ear right now just talking about it.
Yeah, you can hear it in your voice. The memory is right there for you.
It is, especially as like we approach that first birthday. Like, I'm really in that reminiscence at the moment.
I reckon there's a return to the birth portal kind of energy towards that first birthday.
Definitely, absolutely. I feel that. What else? Yeah,
postpartum kind of different as well, like, and that hours after birth, like compared to the birth you guys had together before as well, where you had her taken off you, now it was just you guys in this dyad.
Oh, it was beautiful. I stayed in the pool. I had Finn skin to skin. I boobed him. I stayed in the pool till I birthed placenta, which was about 40 minutes later. And I don't think I gave him to Michael to hold. No, I didn't. I don't think I was pretty much, he's my baby, I'm holding him.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was really, really nice. My kids, after the birth, they didn't care anymore. And they were off doing whatever they were doing. And Michael was just there in and out. And then the second midwife kind of like prepared the bed and stuff for when I was ready to hop out.
Mm-hmm.
Hopped out, got into the bed where the second midwife, so Claire did a lot of the paperwork and stuff, and the second midwife did like a lot of the checks and whatnot, made sure that everything was going okay. They gave me a cup of tea. They fed me some food from my house. It was just beautiful, and I felt really cared for and nourished in those couple of hours. And like they put on loads of washing for me, and it was beautiful. And they stayed around for a couple of hours. Like, they checked over the placenta. We cut the cord after a couple of hours. Everyone got their first cuddles while everyone was still there. Yeah, it was really nice. And like they, you know, they checked my belly to make sure everything was going down nicely and bleeding wasn't bad and whatnot. So it was good. Definitely a huge difference in care that you receive at home compared to the hospital.
Mm.
And as I've said to Michael, I would happily pay even like if someone was like, say, if we have a free birth or whatnot, I would still be happy to pay someone to come in and just nurture you those first couple of hours postpartum, because they were just amazing, just getting treated like an absolute queen. It was just, yeah, I loved it. My actual postpartum after the fact, I don't think we had any visitors for about a week, and then we only let in like one or two people.
Yeah.
And we were very, very selective about who we let in, and they had to bring food or something for our kids or to help with our kids. We were quite strict with that.
How did you present that? Because I think that can be hard sometimes, and I'd love to hear how you kind of shared that with people that, yes, you can come, but this is the
So with my circle of people on my side of things, everyone's quite used to my abrupt personality, I guess. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, say my dad would be like, oh, you know, I want to come and visit. I would be like, well, you're not coming until you bring me a meal. So it was, I was quite abrupt. Some people wanted to know how to help us and wanted to know what to get Finn. And I was quite abrupt and I said, well, Finn doesn't need anything. He's a baby, but I would love some food, please. So they organized like a butcher's. So that was really nice. So I have no problems communicating my needs. I probably wouldn't feel as comfortable saying that to like Michael's family and stuff, but Michael's family is quite reserved anyway. Like we don't really see them in very often.
Yeah.
So that kind of wasn't really an issue for us. And then again, like our friendship circle is quite small anyway, and we're used to it being just us for the most part, and those that are in our circle kind of know how to support us anyway. So we were very blessed, but again, still felt quite isolated too, because we don't have that big, beautiful family that just ushers around you and supports you through it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
how did the girls go as well?
Mila was absolutely beautiful because she'd gone through it before with Lottie, and she transitioned amazingly. Lottie was quite challenging, just shy of 3 when Finn was born and I was still breastfeeding her.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of jealousy and a lot of behaviours coming out, and it's probably – and she was quite – I don't want to scare people, but she was quite dangerous with a baby.
Yeah.
And I had to watch her constantly, so it was really hard landing properly with Finn because I had to consistently watch Lottie and what was going on there. And I wish I could say that it's getting better 12 months on, but I think that like it's changed. Yeah. She doesn't want to hurt him and hate him anymore. She loves him now, but she loves him so hard that she still hurts him. So I wish that the sibling thing with Lottie and Finn was great, but it's not.
Long-term navigating.
I hope so. Hopefully in years to come they're good.
Yeah, yeah. And how was your kind of body health, and like how are you feeling mentally after this birth? Worlds apart from what you'd had previously. Did you find grief from those previous births again, or were you on this high?
I really sat with what my body needed and I honoured that. So I think because there's a lot of culture around having to bounce back really quickly, and I tried to force myself to do that with both the girls. So I didn't do it this time, and my body felt like it took longer to heal. I don't think that it actually took longer to heal. I just think that I allowed myself to sit in the healing process and really honor that. So I pretty much stayed in bed for a week straight, and I didn't come out of bed except to go to the toilet and to shower.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so I tried to base my postpartum on a week in the bed, a week on the bed, and a week around the bed, because Michael had 3 weeks off work. So, and during that, yeah, it was really nice.
As well, like that sounds like a really accessible concept for sharing.
Yeah, well, Claire suggested it to me as well, actually, during pregnancy, so I can't take credit for that. It was something Claire suggested, but it was already something I was toying with, was 3 weeks of solid rest.
Yeah.
And
I believe it makes a massive difference. And it's even just hits that logical part of your brain. Like for 9 months, your uterus has been out, and so now it's in a state of inversion. So lying down is going to allow that to settle more.
Definitely. Without
pressure on your pelvic floor or your other organs, like things can be in a state of rest, and the physical act of lying allows that uterus to invert.
Yes, definitely. And I'd done a lot of like preparation in terms of like we had a lot of freezer meals. And I had a friend, she had like so the golden month, she dropped like had a box of their packaged goods like delivered as well.
Yeah.
Which just required a couple of ingredients and could be easily cooked up. So yeah, we had a lot of nourishment. I had a lot of rest. If I could do it again, I wish I would rest even longer. But yeah. I don't think 3 weeks is truly long enough. I think you really need to have like the first 6 weeks just rest, but not everyone has that accessible to them, and we surely didn't.
Yeah. And how did Finn land?
Oh, he was just amazing. It's so beautiful. I think the way you birth them into this world really helps the way they land into this world. And he just slept amazing. He just, nothing was a problem. He hardly cried. Like, he's just perfect. And to be honest, he's been the easiest baby I've had out of all three. And I put it to the preconception, the conception, the pregnancy and the birth, and really honoring those few weeks as well.
Yeah, I hear you. And that sounds like actually in itself a beautiful little seed, a little piece of advice to take forward, like to really be in alignment with how you're working with your birth workers and what you're presenting forward as your birth choices, and actualizing that and moving along that journey of birth, and all of that alignment you were in yourself. He was a lot of alignment too.
He's, I don't know, there's something pretty magical about Finn. He's my little ray of sunshine.
Yeah. So, like I told you at the beginning, Rural Births podcast, we're going tangential at the moment. Into what I wish wasn't so tangential, but into people who've sought different birth pathways, because we are presented a narrative with rural birth that it is an impossibility. And I would love to hear what you would like other rural women to know as they're pregnant or entering preconception or planning that birth portal passageway. What would you like to give to them as a piece of advice or knowledge or something that they can go look into? How would you like to guide them through this landscape that is rural birthing?
I think it's I think regardless of what's available to you rurally, whether that's home birth, a hospital or free birth, I think educating yourself on what is available to support you to have the birth that you want in that area, whether that's a birth worker, a midwife, like whatever you need to get you through that, I think, yeah, look into what's available around you and access that, because it will support you to get to where you want to be and experience what you want to experience.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your stories, for sharing that journey that was hospital to home births and how you navigated what was a yes in your body for birthing your son into the world in the way that aligned for you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. And thanks for letting me talk your ear off.
happy.
Thank you so much to Cassie for sharing her birth stories. These stories are the medicine that we need to change the landscape of rural birthing. If you would like to share your rural birth story, please get in touch. Send me an email to ruralbirths@gmail.com. And thank you again for listening to today's episode.